helped Almanzo push them till they stood properly side by side again. Then he said, "Well, son, I'll leave you to figure it out." And he went into the barn. Then Almanzo knew that he was really old enough to do important things all by himself. He stood in the snow and looked at the calves, and they stared innocently at him. He wondered how to teach them what Gadap meant. There wasn't any way to tell them, but he must find some way to tell them. "When I say Gadap, you must walk straight ahead." Almanzo thought a while, and then he left the calves and went to the cow's feed box and filled his pockets with carrots. He came back and stood as far in front of the calves as he could, holding the rope in his left hand. He put his right hand into the pocket of his barn jumper. Then he shouted, "Gadap!" And he showed Star and Bright a carrot in his hand. They came eagerly. "Whoa!" Almanzo shouted when they reached him, and they stopped for the carrot. He gave each of them a piece, and when they had eaten it, he backed away again, and putting his hand in his pocket, he shouted, "Gadap!" It was astonishing how quickly they learned that Gadap meant to start forward, and Whoa meant to stop. They were behaving as well as grown-up oxen when Father came to the barn door and said, "That's enough, son." Almanzo did not think it was enough, but of course he could not contradict Father. "Calves will get sullen and stop minding you if you work them too long at first," Father said. "Besides, it's dinner time." Almanzo could hardly believe it. The whole morning had gone in a minute. He took out the bow pins, let the bows down, and lifted the yoke off the calves' necks. He put Star and Bright in their warm stall. Then Father showed him how to wipe the bows and yoke with wisps of clean hay and hang them on their pegs. He must always clean them and keep them dry, or the calves would have sore necks. In the horse barn, he stopped just a minute to look at the colts. He liked Star and Bright, but calves were clumsy and awkward compared with the slender, fine, quick colts. Their nostrils fluttered when they breathed. Their ears moved as swiftly as birds. They tossed their heads with a flutter of manes and daintily pawed with their slender legs and little hooves, and their eyes were full of spirit. "I'd like to help break a colt," Almanzo ventured to say.
"It's a man's job, son," Father said. "One little mistake will ruin a fine colt."
Almanzo did not say any more. He went soberly into the house. It was strange to be eating all alone with Father and Mother. They ate at the table in the kitchen because there was no company today. The kitchen was bright with the glitter of snow outside. The floor and the tables were scrubbed bone white with lye and sand. The tin saucepans glittered silver, and the copper pots gleamed gold on the walls. The tea kettle hummed, and the geraniums on the windowsill were redder than Mother's red dress. Almanzo was very hungry. He ate in silence, busily filling the big emptiness inside him, while Father and Mother talked. When they finished eating, Mother jumped up and began putting the dishes into the dishpan. "You fill the wood box, Almanzo," she said, "and then there's other things you can do." Almanzo opened the woodshed door by the stove. There, right before him, was a new hand sled. He could hardly believe it was for him. The calf yoke was his birthday present. He asked, "Whose sled is that, Father? Is it... It isn't for me." Mother laughed, and Father twinkled his eyes and asked, "Do you know any other 9-year-old that wants it?" It was a beautiful sled. Father had made it of hickory. It was long and slim and swift-looking. The hickory runners had been soaked and bent into long, clean curves that seemed ready to fly. Almanzo stroked the shiny, smooth wood. It was polished so perfectly that he could not feel even the tops of the wooden pegs that held it together. There was a bar between the runners for his feet. Get along with you, Mother said, laughing. Take that sled outdoors where it belongs.
The cold stood steadily at 40 below zero, but the sun was shining, and all afternoon Almanzo played with his sled. Of course, it would not slide in the soft, deep snow, but in the road, the bobsled's runners had made two sleek, hard tracks. At the top of the hill, Almanzo started the sled and flung himself on it, and away he went. Only the track was curving and narrow, so sooner or later he spilled into the drifts. End over end went the flying sled, and headlong went Almanzo. But he floundered out and climbed the hill again. Several times he went to the house for apples and donuts and cookies. Downstairs was still warm and empty. Upstairs, there was the thud-thud of Mother's loom and the clickety-clack of the flying shuttle. Almanzo opened the woodshed door and heard the slithery, soft sound of a shaving knife and the flap of a turned shingle. He climbed the stairs to Father's attic workroom. His snowy mittens hung by their string around his neck. In his right hand, he held a donut, and in his left hand, two cookies. He took a bite of donut and then a bite of cookie. Father sat astraddle on the end of the shaving bench by the window. The bench slanted upward toward him, and at the top of the slant, two pegs stood up. At his right hand was a pile of rough shingles which he had split with his axe from short lengths of oak logs. He picked up a shingle, laid its end against the pegs, and then drew the shaving knife up its side. One stroke smoothed it. Another stroke shaved the upper end thinner than the lower end. Father flipped the shingle over. Two strokes on that side, and it was done. Father laid it on the pile of finished shingles and set another rough one against the pegs. His hands moved smoothly and quickly. They did not stop even when he looked up and twinkled at Almanzo. "Be you having a good time, son?" he asked.
"Father, can I do that?" said Almanzo.
Father slid back on the bench to make room in front of him. Almanzo straddled it and crammed the rest of the doughnut into his mouth. He took the handles of the long knife in his hands and shaved carefully up the shingle. It wasn't as easy as it looked. So Father put his big hands over Almanzo's, and together they shaved the shingle smooth. Then Almanzo turned it over, and they shaved the other side. That was all he wanted to do. He got off the bench and went in to see Mother. Her hands were flying, and her right foot was tapping on the treadle of the loom. Back and forth the shuttle flew from her right hand to her left and back again between the even threads of warp, and swiftly the threads of warp crisscrossed each other, catching fast the thread that the shuttle left behind. Thud, said the treadle. Clackety-clack, said the shuttle. Thump, said the handbar, and back flew the shuttle. Mother's workroom was large and bright and warm from the heating stove's chimney. Mother's little rocking chair was by one window, and beside it a basket of carpet rags, torn for sewing. In a corner stood the idle spinning wheel. All along one wall were shelves full of hanks of red and brown and blue and yellow yarn which Mother had dyed last summer. But the cloth on the loom was sheep's gray. Mother was weaving undyed wool from a white sheep and wool from a black sheep twisted together.
"What's that for?" said Almanzo.
"Don't point, Almanzo," Mother said. "That's not good manners." She spoke loudly above the noise of the loom.
"Who's it for?"
asked Almanzo, not pointing this time.
"Royal. It's his academy suit," said Mother.
Royal was going to the academy in Malone next winter, and Mother was weaving the cloth for his new suit. So everything was snug and comfortable in the house, and Almanzo went downstairs and took two more donuts from the donut jar, and then he played outdoors again with his sled. Too soon the shadow slanted down the eastward slopes, and he had to put his sled away and help water the stock, for it was chore time. The well was quite a long way from the barns. A little house stood over the pump, and the water ran down a trough through the wall and into the big watering trough outside. The troughs were coated with ice, and the pump handle was so cold that it burned like fire if you touched it with a bare finger. Boys sometimes dared other boys to lick a pump handle in cold weather. Almanzo knew better than to take the dare. Your tongue would freeze to the iron, and you must either starve to death or pull away and leave part of your tongue there. Almanzo stood in the icy pump house, and he pumped with all his might while Father led the horses to the trough outside. First, Father led out the teams, with the young colts following their mothers. Then he led out the older colts, one at a time. They were not yet well broken, and they pranced and jumped and jerked at the halter rope because of the cold, but Father hung on and did not let them get away. All the time Almanzo was pumping as fast as he could. The water gushed from the pump with a chilly sound, and the horses thrust their shivering noses into it and drank it up quickly. Then Father took the pump handle. He pumped the big trough full, and he went to the barns and turned out all the cattle. Cattle did not have to be led to water. They came eagerly to the trough and drank while Almanzo pumped. Then they hurried back to the warm barns, and each went to his own place. Each cow turned into her own stall and put her head between her own stanchions. They never made a mistake. Whether this was because they had more sense than horses, or because they had so little sense that they did everything by habit, Father did not know. Now Almanzo took the pitchfork and began to clean the stalls, while Father measured oats and peas into the feed boxes. Royal came from school, and they all finished chores together as usual. Almanzo's birthday was over. He thought he must go to school next day, but that night Father said it was time to cut ice. Almanzo could stay at home to help, and so could Royal. Filling the ice house. The weather was so cold that the snow was like sand underfoot. A little water thrown into the air came down as tiny balls of ice. Even on the south side of the house at noon, the snow did not soften. This was perfect weather for cutting ice, because when the blocks were lifted from the pond, no water would drip. It would instantly freeze. The sun was rising, and all the eastern slopes of the snowdrifts were rosy in its light when Almanzo snuggled under the fur robes between Father and Royal in the big bobsled, and they set out to the pond on Trout River. The horses trotted briskly, shaking jingles from their bells. Their breath steamed from their nostrils, and the bobsled's runners squeaked on the hard snow. The cold air crinkled inside Almanzo's tingling nose, but every minute the sun shone more brightly, striking tiny glitters of red and green light from the snow, and all through the woods there were sparkles of sharp white lights and icicles. It was a mile to the pond and the woods, and once Father got out to put his hands over the horses' noses, their breaths had frozen over their nostrils, making it hard for them to breathe. Father's hands melted the frost, and they went on briskly. French Joe and Lazy John were waiting on the pond when the bobsled drove up. They were Frenchmen who lived in little log houses in the woods. They had no farms. They hunted and trapped and fished. They sang and joked and danced, and they drank red wine instead of cider. When Father needed a hired man, they worked for him, and he paid them with salt pork from the barrels down cellar. They stood on the snowy pond in their tall boots and plaid jackets and fur caps with fur earmuffs, and the frost of their breaths was on their long mustaches. Each had an axe on his shoulder, and they carried crosscut saws. A crosscut saw has a long, narrow blade with wooden handles at the ends. Two men must pull it back and forth across the edge of whatever they want to saw in two. But they could not saw ice that way, because the ice was solid underfoot, like a floor. It had no edge to saw across. When Father saw them, he laughed and called out, "You flipped that penny yet?" Everybody laughed but Almanzo. He did not know the joke, so French Joe told him. "Once two Irishmen were sent out to saw ice with a crosscut saw. They had never sawed ice before. They looked at the ice, and they looked at the saw, till at last Pat took a penny out of his pocket, and he says he, 'Now, Jamie, be fair. Heads or tails, who goes below?' Then Almanzo laughed to think of anyone going down into the dark, cold water under the ice to pull one end of the cross-cut saw. It was funny that there were people who didn't know how to saw ice. He trudged with the others across the ice to the middle of the pond. A sharp wind blew there, driving wisps of snow before it. Above the deep water, the ice was smooth and dark, swept almost bare of snow. Almanzo watched while Joe and John chopped a big three-cornered hole in it. They lifted out the broken pieces of ice and carried them away, leaving the hole full of open water. "She's about 20 inches thick," Lazy John said. "Then saw the ice 20 inches, said Father. Lazy John and French Joe knelt at the edge of the hole. They lowered their crosscut saws into the water and began to saw. Nobody pulled the ends of the saws under the water. Side by side, they sawed two straight cracks through the ice, 20 inches apart and 20 feet long. Then with the axe, John broke the ice across, and a slab 20 inches wide, 20 inches thick, and 20 feet long rose a little and floated free. With a pole, John pushed the slab toward the three-cornered hole, and as the end was thrust out, crackling the thin ice, freezing on the water, Joe sawed off 20-inch lengths of it. Father picked up the cubes with the big iron ice tongs and loaded them onto the bobsleds. Almanzo ran to the edge of the hole, watching the saw. Suddenly, right on the very edge, he slipped. He felt himself falling headlong into the dark water. His hands couldn't catch hold of anything. He knew he would sink and be drawn under the solid ice. The swift current would pull him under the ice where nobody could find him. He'd drown, held down by the ice in the dark. French Joe grabbed him just in time. He heard a shout and felt a rough hand jerk him by one leg. He felt a terrific crash, and then he was lying on his stomach on the good, solid ice. He got up on his feet. Father was coming, running. Father stood over him, big and terrible. "You ought to have the worst whipping of your life," Father said. "Yes, Father," Almanzo whispered. He knew it. He knew he should have been more careful. A boy 9 years old is too big to do foolish things because he doesn't stop to think. Almanzo knew that and felt ashamed. He shrank up small inside, his clothes and his legs shivered, afraid of the whipping. Father's whippings hurt, but he knew he deserved to be whipped. The whip was on the bobsled. "I won't thrash you this time," Father decided. "But see to it you stay away from that edge." "Yes, Father," Almanzo whispered. He went away from the hole and did not go near it again. Father finished loading the bobsled. Then he spread the lap robes on top of the ice, and Almanzo rode on them with Father and Royal back to the ice house near the barns. The ice house
was built of boards with wide cracks between. It was set high from the ground on wooden blocks and looked like a big cage. Only the floor and the roof were solid. On the floor was a huge mound of sawdust which Father had hauled from the lumber mill. With a shovel, Father spread the sawdust 3 inches thick on the floor. On this he laid the cubes of ice 3 inches apart. Then he drove back to the pond, and Almanzo went to work with Royal in the ice house. They filled every crack between the cubes with sawdust and tamped it down tightly with sticks. Then they shoveled the whole mound of sawdust on top of the ice in a corner, and where it had been, they covered the floor with cubes of ice and packed them in sawdust. Then they covered it all with sawdust 3 inches thick. They worked as fast as they could, but before they finished, Father came with another load of ice. He laid down another layer of ice cubes 3 inches apart and drove away, leaving them to fill every crevice tightly with sawdust and spread sawdust over the top and shove the rest of the mound of sawdust up again. They worked so hard that the exercise kept them warm. But long before noon, Almanzo was hungrier than wolves. He couldn't stop work long enough to run into the house for a donut. All of his middle was hollow with a gnawing inside it. He knelt on the ice, pushing sawdust into the cracks with his mittened hand and pounding it down with a stick as fast as he could, and he asked Royal, "What would you like best to eat?" They talked about spare ribs and turkey with dressing and baked beans and crackling cornbread and other good things. But Almanzo said that what he liked most in the world was fried apples and onions. When at last they went in to dinner, there on the table was a big dish of them. Mother knew what he liked best, and she had cooked it for him. Almanzo ate 4 large helpings of apples and onions fried together. He ate roast beef and brown gravy and mashed potatoes and creamed carrots and boiled turnips and countless slices of buttered bread with crabapple jelly. "It takes a great deal to feed a growing boy," Mother said, and she put a thick slice of bird's nest pudding on his bare plate and handed him the pitcher of sweetened cream speckled with nutmeg. Almanzo poured the heavy cream over the apples nested in the fluffy crust. The syrupy brown juice curled up around the edges of the cream. Almanzo took up his spoon and ate every bit. Then until chore time, he and Royal worked in the ice house. All next day they worked, and all the next day. Just at dusk on the third day, Father helped them spread the last layer of sawdust over the topmost cubes of ice in the peak of the ice house roof. And that job was done. Buried in sawdust, the blocks of ice would not melt in the hottest summer weather. One at a time, they would be dug out, and Mother would make ice cream and lemonade and cold eggnog. Saturday night. That night was Saturday night. All day long, Mother had been baking, and when Almanzo went into the kitchen for the milk pails, she was still frying doughnuts. The place was full of their hot brown smell and the wheaty smell of new bread, the spicy smell of cakes, and the syrupy smell of pies. Almanzo took the biggest doughnut from the pan and bit off its crisp end. Mother was rolling out the golden dough, slashing it into long strips, rolling and doubling and twisting the strips. Her fingers flew. You could hardly see them. The strips seemed to twist themselves under her hands and to leap into the big copper kettle of swirling hot fat. Plump! They went to the bottom, sending up bubbles. Then quickly they came popping up to float and slowly swell till they rolled themselves over, their pale golden backs going into the fat and their plump brown bellies rising out of it. They rolled over, Mother said, because they were twisted. Some women made a newfangled shape, round, with a hole in the middle. But round donuts wouldn't turn themselves over. Mother didn't have time to waste turning donuts. It was quicker to twist them. Almanzo liked baking day, but he didn't like Saturday night. On Saturday night, there was no cozy evening by the heater with apples, popcorn, and cider. Saturday night was bath night. After supper, Almanzo and Royal again put on their coats and caps and mufflers and mittens. They carried a tub from the wash tub outdoors to the rainwater barrel. Everything was ghostly with snow. The stars were frosty in the sky, and only a little faint light came from the candle in the kitchen. The inside of the rainwater barrel was coated thick with ice, and in the center, where the ice was chopped every day to keep the barrel from bursting, the hole had grown smaller and smaller. Royal chopped at it, and when his hatchet went through with an oozy thud, the water welled up quickly because the ice was squeezing it from all sides. It's odd that water swells when it freezes. Everything else gets smaller in the cold. Almanzo began dipping water and floating pieces of ice into the wash tub. It was cold, slow work dipping through the small hole, and he had an idea. Long icicles hung from the kitchen eaves. At the top, they were a solid piece of ice, then their pointed tips hung down almost to the snow. Almanzo took hold of one and jerked, but only the tip broke off. The hatchet had frozen to the porch floor where Royal had laid it, but Almanzo tugged it loose. He lifted it up in both hands and hit the icicles. An avalanche of ice came down with a splintering crash. It was a glorious noise. "Hi, gimme," Royal said, but Almanzo hit the icicles again. The noise was louder than before. "You're bigger than I'd be. You hit 'em with your fists," Almanzo said. So Royal hit the icicles with both his fists. Almanzo hit them again with the hatchet. The noise was immense. Almanzo yelled, and Royal yelled, and they hit more and more icicles. Big pieces of ice were flying all over the porch floor, and flying pieces pitted the snow. Along the eaves there was a gap as though the roof had lost some teeth. Mother flung open the kitchen door. "Mercy on us," she cried. "Royal, Almanzo, be you hurt?" "No, Mother," Almanzo said meekly. "What is it? What be you doing?" Almanzo felt guilty, but they had not really been playing when they had work to do. "Getting ice for bathwater, Mother," he said. "My land, such a racket I never heard. Must you yell like Comanches?" "No, Mother," Almanzo said. Mother's teeth chattered in the cold, and she shut the door. Almanzo and Royal silently picked up the fallen icicles and silently filled the tub. It was so heavy they staggered when they carried it, and Father had to lift it onto the kitchen stove. The ice melted while Almanzo greased his moccasins and Royal greased his boots. In the pantry, Mother was filling the 6-quart pan with boiled beans, putting in onions and peppers and the piece of fat pork, and pouring scrolls of molasses over all. Then Almanzo saw her open the flour barrels. She flung rye flour and cornmeal into the big yellow crock and stirred in milk and eggs and things and poured the big baking pan full of the yellow-gray rye and Injun dough. "You fetch the rye and Injun, Almanzo. Don't spill it," she said. She snatched up the pan of beans, and Almanzo followed more slowly with the heavy pan of rye and Injun. Father opened the big doors of the oven in the heater, and Mother slid the beans and the bread inside. They would slowly bake there till Sunday dinner time. Then Almanzo was left alone in the kitchen to take his bath.
His clean underwear was hanging on a chair back to air and warm. The washcloth and towel and the small wooden pannikin of soft soap were on another chair. He brought another wash tub from the woodshed and put it on the floor in front of the open oven door. He took off his waist and one pair of socks and his pants. Then he dipped some warm water from the tub on the stove into the tub on the floor. He took off his other pair of socks and his underwear, and his bare skin felt good in the heat from the oven. He toasted in the heat, and he thought he might just put on his clean underwear and not take a bath at all, but Mother would look when he went into the dining room. So he stepped into the water. It covered his feet. With his fingers, he dug some of the brown, slimy, soft soap from the pannikin and smeared it on the washcloth. Then he scrubbed himself well all over. The water was warm around his toes, but it felt cold on his body. His wet belly steamed in the heat from the oven, but his wet back shivered. And when he turned around, his back seemed to blister, but his front was very cold. So he washed as quickly as he could, and he dried himself and got into his warm underwaist and his woolly long drawers, and he put on his long woolen nightshirt. Then he remembered his ears. He took the washcloth again, and he scrubbed his ears and the back of his neck. He put on his nightcap. He felt very clean and good, and his skin felt sleek in the fresh, warm clothes. It was the Saturday night feeling. It was pleasant, but Almanzo didn't like it well enough to take a bath for it. If he could have had it his way, he wouldn't have taken a bath till spring. He did not have to empty his tub, because if he went outdoors after taking a bath, he would catch cold. Alice would empty the tub and wash it before she bathed in it. Then Eliza Jane would empty Alice's, and Royal would empty Eliza Jane's, and Mother would empty Royal's. Late at night, Father would empty Mother's and take his bath, and the next morning he would empty the tub for the last time. Almanzo went into the dining room in his clean, creamy white underwear and socks and nightshirt and cap. Mother looked at him, and he went to her to be inspected. She laid down her knitting, and she looked at his ears and the back of his neck, and she looked at his soapy, clean face, and she gave him a hug and a squeeze. "There. Run along with you to bed." He lighted a candle, and he padded quickly up the cold stairs and blew out the candle and jumped into the soft, cold feather bed. He began to say his prayers, but went to sleep before he finished them. Sunday. When Almanzo trudged into the kitchen next morning with two brimming milk pails, Mother was making stacked pancakes because this was Sunday. The big blue platter on the stove's hearth was full of plump sausage cakes. Eliza Jane was cutting apple pies, and Alice was dishing up the oatmeal as usual. But the little blue platter stood hot on the back of the stove, and 10 stacks of pancakes rose in tall towers on it. 10 pancakes cooked on the smoking griddle, and as fast as they were done, Mother added another cake to each stack and buttered it lavishly and covered it with maple sugar. Butter and sugar melted together and soaked the fluffy pancakes and dripped all down their crisp edges. That was stacked pancakes. Almanzo liked them better than any other kind of pancakes. Mother kept on frying them till the others had eaten their oatmeal. She could never make too many stacked pancakes. They all ate pile after pile of them, and Almanzo was still eating when Mother pushed back her chair and said, "Mercy on us, 8 o'clock! I must fly!" Mother always flew. Her feet went pattering, her hands moved so fast you could hardly watch them. She never sat down in the daytime except at her spinning wheel or loom, and then her hands flew, her feet tapped, the spinning wheel was a blur, or the loom was clattering, thump, thud, clickety-clack.
but on Sunday morning she made everybody else hurry, too. Father curried and brushed the sleek brown driving horses till they shone. Almanzo dusted the sleigh, and Royal wiped the silver-mounted harness. They hitched up the horses, and then they went to the house to put on their Sunday clothes. Mother was in the pantry, setting the top crust on the Sunday chicken pie. Three fat hens were in the pie, under the bubbling gravy. Mother spread the crust and crimped the edges, and the gravy showed through the two pine trees she had cut in the dough. She put the pie in the heating stove's oven, with the beans and the Ryan engine bread. Father filled the stove with hickory logs and closed the dampers, while Mother flew to lay out his clothes and dress herself. Poor people had to wear homespun on Sundays, and Royal and Almanzo wore full cloth. But Father and Mother and the girls were very fine, in clothes that Mother had made of store-bought cloth, woven by machines. She had made Father's suit of fine black broadcloth. The coat had a velvet collar, and his shirt was made of French calico. His stock was black silk, and on Sundays he did not wear boots. He wore shoes of thin calfskin. Mother was dressed in brown merino, with a white lace collar and white lace frills at her wrists under the big, bell-shaped sleeves. She had knitted the lace of finest thread, and it was like cobwebs. There were rows of brown velvet around her sleeves and down the front of her basque, and she had made her bonnet of the same brown velvet with brown velvet strings tied under her chin. Almanzo was proud of Mother in her fine Sunday clothes. The girls were very fine, too, but he did not feel the same about them. Their hoop skirts were so big that Royal and Almanzo could hardly get into the sleigh. They had to scrooge down and let those hoops bulge over their knees. And if they even moved, Eliza Jane would cry out, "Be careful, clumsy!" And Alice would mourn, "Oh, dear me, my ribbons are mussed." But when they were all tucked under the buffalo skin robes, with hot bricks at their feet, Father let the prancing horses go, and Almanzo forgot everything else. The sleigh went like the wind. The beautiful horses shone in the sun. Their necks were arched, and their heads were up, and their slender legs spurned the snowy road. They seemed to be flying, their glossy long manes and tails blowing back in the wind of their speed. Father sat straight and proud, holding the reins and letting the horses go as fast as they would. He never used the whip. His horses were gentle and perfectly trained. He had only to tighten or slacken the reins, and they obeyed him. His horses were the best horses in New York State, or maybe in the whole world. Malone was 5 miles away, but Father never started till 30 minutes before church time. That team would trot the whole 5 miles, and he would stable them and blanket them and be on the church steps when the bell rang. When Almanzo thought that it would be years and years before he could hold reins and drive horses like that, he could hardly bear it. In no time at all, Father was driving into the church sheds in Malone. The sheds were one long, low building all around the four sides of a square. You drove into the square through a gate. Every man who belonged to the church paid rent for a shed, according to his means, and Father had the best one. It was so large that he drove inside it to unhitch. And there was a manger with feed boxes and space for hay and oats. Father let Almanzo help put blankets on the horses, while Mother and the girls shook out their skirts and smoothed their ribbons. Then they all walked sedately into the church. The first clang of the bell rang out when they were on the steps. After that, there was nothing to do but sit still till the sermon was over. It was 2 hours long. Almanzo's legs ached
and his jaw wanted to yawn, but he dared not yawn or fidget. He must sit perfectly still and never take his eyes from the preacher's solemn face or wagging beard. Almanzo couldn't understand how Father knew that he wasn't looking at the preacher if Father was looking at the preacher himself. But Father always did know. At last it was over. In the sunshine outside the church, Almanzo felt better. Boys must not run or laugh or talk loudly on Sunday, but they could talk quietly, and Almanzo's cousin Frank was there. Frank's father was Uncle Wesley. He owned the potato starch mill and lived in town. He did not have a farm, so Frank was only a town boy, and he played with town boys. But this Sunday morning, he was wearing a store-bought cap. It was made of plaid cloth, machine-woven, and it had ear flaps that buttoned under the chin. Frank unbuttoned them and showed Almanzo that they would turn up and button across the cap's top. He said the cap came from New York City. His father had bought it in Mr. Case's store. Almanzo had never seen a cap like that. He wanted one. Royal said it was a silly cap. He said to Frank, "What's the sense of ear flaps that button over the top? Nobody has ears on the top of his head." So Almanzo knew that Royal wanted a cap like that, too. "How much did it cost?" Almanzo asked. 50 cents, Frank said proudly. Almanzo knew he could not have one. The caps that Mother made were snug and warm, and it would be a foolish waste of money to buy a cap. 50 cents was a lot of money. "You just ought to see our horses," he said to Frank. "Huh! They're not your horses," Frank said. "They're your father's horses. You haven't got a horse, nor even a colt." "I'm going to have a colt," said Almanzo. "When?" Frank asked. Just then Eliza Jane called over her shoulder, "Come, Almanzo, Father's hitching up." He hurried away after Eliza Jane, but Frank called after him low, "You are not either going to have a colt." Almanzo got soberly into the sleigh. He wondered if he would ever be big enough to have anything he wanted. When he was younger, Father sometimes let him hold the ends of the reins while Father drove, but he was not a baby now. He wanted to drive the horses himself. Father allowed him to brush and currycomb and rub down the gentle old workhorses and to drive them on the harrow. But he could not even go into the stalls with the spirited driving horses or the colts. He hardly dared stroke their soft noses through the bars and scratch a little on their foreheads under the forelocks. Father said, "You boys keep away from those colts. In 5 minutes you can teach them tricks it will take me months to gentle out of them." He felt a little better when he sat down to the good Sunday dinner. Mother sliced the hot Ryan Engine bread on the breadboard by her plate. Father's spoon cut deep into the chicken pie. He scooped out big pieces of thick crust and turned up their fluffy yellow undersides on the plate. He poured gravy over them. He dipped up big pieces of tender chicken, dark meat and white meat sliding from the bones. He added a mound of baked beans and topped it with a quivering slice of fat pork. At the edge of the plate, he piled dark red beet pickles, and he handed the plate to Almanzo. Silently, Almanzo ate it all. Then he ate a piece of pumpkin pie, and he felt very full inside. But he ate a piece of apple pie with cheese. After dinner, Eliza Jane and Alice did the dishes, but Father and Mother and Royal and Almanzo did nothing at all. The whole afternoon they sat in the drowsy, warm dining room. Mother read the Bible, and Eliza Jane read a book, and Father's head nodded till he woke with a jerk, and then it began to nod again. Royal fingered the wooden chain that he could not whittle, and Alice looked for a long time out of the window. But Almanzo just sat. He had to. He was not allowed to do anything else, for Sunday was not a day for working or playing. It was a day for going to church and for sitting still. Almanzo was glad when it was time to do the chores. Breaking the calves. Almanzo had been so busy filling the ice house that he had no time to give the calves another lesson. So on Monday morning he said, "Father, I can't go to school today, can I? If I don't work those calves, they will forget how to act." Father tugged his beard and twinkled his eyes. "Seems as though a boy might forget his lesson, too," he said. Almanzo had not thought of that. He thought a minute and said, "Well, I have had more lessons than the calves, and besides, they are younger than I be." Father looked solemn, but his beard had a smile under it, and Mother exclaimed, "Oh, let the boy stay home if he wants. It won't hurt him for once in a way, and he's right. The calves do need breaking." So Almanzo went to the barn and called the little calves out into the frosty air. He fitted the little yoke over their necks, and he held up the bows and put the bow pins in and tied a rope around Star's small nubs of horns. He did this all by himself. All that morning he backed, little by little, around the barnyard, shouting, "Giddap!" and then, "Whoa!" Star and Bright came eagerly when he yelled, "Giddap!" and then they stopped when he said, "Whoa!" and licked up the pieces of carrot from his woolly mittens. Now and then he ate a piece of raw carrot himself. The outside part is best. It comes off in a thick, solid ring, and it is sweet. The inside part is juicier and clear, like yellow ice, but it has a thin, sharp taste. At noon, Father said the calves had been worked enough for one day, and that afternoon he would show Almanzo how to make a whip. They went into the woods, and Father cut some moosewood boughs. Almanzo carried them up to Father's workroom over the woodshed, and Father showed him how to peel off the bark in strips, and then how to braid a whiplash. First, he tied the ends of 5 strips together, and then he braided them in a round, solid braid. All that afternoon he sat beside Father's bench. Father shaved shingles, and Almanzo carefully braided his whip, just as Father braided the big black snake whips of leather. While he turned and twisted the strips, the thin outer bark fell off in flakes, leaving the soft, white inside bark. The whip would have been white, except that Almanzo's hands left a few smudges. He could not finish it before chore time, and the next day he had to go to school. But he braided his whip every evening by the heater till the lash was 5 feet long. Then Father lent him his jackknife, and Almanzo whittled a wooden handle and bound the lash to it with strips of moosewood bark. The whip was done. It would be a perfectly good whip until it dried brittle in the hot summer. Almanzo could crack it almost as loudly as Father cracked a blacksnake whip, and he did not finish it a minute soon, for already he needed it to give the calves their next lesson. Now he had to teach them to turn to the left when he shouted, "Haw!" and to turn to the right when he shouted, "Gee!" As soon as the whip was ready, he began. Every Saturday morning he spent in the barnyard teaching Star and Bright. He never whipped them. He only cracked the whip. He knew you could never teach an animal anything if you struck it or even shouted at it angrily. He must always be gentle and quiet and patient, even when they made mistakes. Star and Bright must like him and trust him and know he would never hurt them. For if they were once afraid of him, they would never be good, willing, hard-working oxen. Now they always obeyed him when he shouted "Giddap!" and "Whoa!" So he did not stand in front of them any longer. He stood at Star's left side. Star was next to him, so Star was the nigh ox. Bright was on the other side of Star, so Bright was the off ox. Almanzo shouted "Gee!" and cracked the whip with all his might close beside Star's head.
Star dodged to get away from it, and that turned both calves to the right. Then Almanzo said, "Get up!" and let them walk a little way, quietly. Then he made the whiplash curl in the air and crack loudly on the other side of Bright, and with the crack he yelled, "Haw!" Bright swerved away from the whip, and that turned both calves to the left. Sometimes they jumped and started to run. Then Almanzo said, "Whoa!" in a deep, solemn voice like Father's. And if they didn't stop, he ran after them and headed them off. When that happened, he had to make them practice "Gedap!" and "Whoa!" again for a long time. He had to be very patient. One very cold Saturday morning, when the calves were feeling frisky, they ran away the first time he cracked the whip. They kicked up their heels and ran bawling around the barnyard, and when he tried to stop them, they ran right over him, tumbling him into the snow. They kept right on running because they liked to run. He could hardly do anything with them that morning, and he was so mad that he shook all over, and tears ran down his cheeks. He wanted to yell at those mean calves and kick them and hit them over the head with the butt of his whip. But he didn't. He put up the whip, and he tied the rope again to Star's horns, and he made them go twice around the barnyard, starting when he said, "Get up!" and stopping when he said, "Whoa!" Afterward, he told Father about it because he thought anyone who was as patient as that with calves was patient enough to be allowed at least to currycomb the colts. But Father didn't seem to think of that. All he said was, "That's right, son. Slow and patient does it. Keep on that way, and you'll have a good yoke of oxen yet." The very next Saturday, Star and Bright obeyed him perfectly. He did not need to crack the whip, because they obeyed his shout. But he cracked it anyway. He liked to. That Saturday, the French boys, Pierre and Louis, came to see Almanzo. Pierre's father was Lazy John, and Louis's father was French Joe. They lived with many brothers and sisters in the little houses in the woods, and went fishing and hunting and berrying. They never had to go to school, but often they came to work or play with Almanzo. They watched while Almanzo showed off his calves in the barnyard. Star and Bright were behaving so well that Almanzo had a splendid idea. He brought out his beautiful birthday hand sled, and with an auger, he bored a hole through the crosspiece between the runners in front. Then he took one of Father's chains and a linchpin from Father's big bobsled, and he hitched up the calves. There was a little iron ring underneath their yoke in the middle, just like the rings in big yokes. Almanzo stuck the handle of his sled through this ring as far as the handle's little crosspiece. The crosspiece kept it from going too far through the ring. Then he fastened one end of the chain to the ring, and the other end he wound around the linchpin in the hole in the crossbar and fastened it. When Star and Bright pulled, they would pull the sled by the chain. When they stopped, the sled's stiff handle would stop the sled. "Now, Louis, you get on the sled," Almanzo said. "No, I'm biggest," Pierre said, pushing Louis back. "I get first ride." "You better not," said Almanzo. "When the calves feel the heft, they're liable to run away. Let Louis go first because he's lighter." "No, I don't want to," Louis said. "I guess you better," Almanzo told him. "No," said Louis. "Be you scared?" Almanzo asked. "Yes, he's scared," Pierre said. "I am not scared," Louis said. "I just don't want to." "He's scared," Pierre sneered. "Yes, he's scared," Almanzo said. Louis said he was not either scared. "You are too scared," Almanzo and Pierre said. They said he was a fraidy cat. They said he was a baby. Pierre told him to go back to his mama. So finally, Louis sat carefully on the sled. Almanzo cracked his whip and shouted, "Get up!" Star and Bright started and stopped. They tried to turn around to see what was behind them. But Almanzo sternly said, "Get up, again, and this time they started and kept on going. Almanzo walked beside them, cracking his whip and shouting, "Gee!" and he drove them clear around the barnyard. Pierre ran after the sled and got on too, and still the calves behaved perfectly. So Almanzo opened the barnyard gate. Pierre and Louis quickly got off the sled, and Pierre said, "They'll run away." Almanzo said, "I guess I know how to handle my own calves." He went back to his place beside Star. He cracked his whip and shouted, "Get up!" And he drove Star and Bright straight out of the safe barnyard into the big, wide, glittering world outside.